If green is your favourite colour or your way of living, then Grounded is the place for you. From big environmental solutions to your own backyard, wherever in the universe you may be, join me, Melanie Walker, on a journey to a cleaner, greener life. Grounded, your window on the environment. And a very, very warm, or should we say slightly warm, morning to you. Good morning.
There's certainly a chill in the air now that autumn is here.
And of course, somebody who sounds very happy about it being autumn, sitting in the studio with me right now, is Carrie Goodwin from Life is a Garden. And yeah, we have had this discussion before.
Yeah.
Over the years, I feel winter coming and immediately I get sad. Seasonal affective disorder, okay? It is an actual thing. I really don't like the cold at all. I don't like the fact that the light changes color. It's no longer golden and full and robust. It becomes this anemic kind of white nuclear blast looking light. I don't like it.
I would have thought it looked crisp. In winter, everything looks crisp.
It just looks
compared
dingy.
Compared to that golden glow.
It looks brown and dusty and dingy.
You need to put on my rose-tinted sunglasses.
This is what I love about talking to you, okay? I love talking to you because you do have rose-tinted sunglasses on, or glasses. Yeah. And I actually have bought a pair to take on my walks with you in the morning. But it is still lovely walking down, in, especially at the moment, on the Spruit and various places. It's early this year, but the fields of cosmos are starting to come into their own. Absolutely glorious, and I'm looking forward to the fact that I'm going for a little trip, and I'm not taking the highway. I'm going down through the Free State.
Oh, beautiful.
And I'm taking the B roads. So we can stop and do more cosmos pictures, because it is that time of year when you do and you look at this and you're like, oh my goodness, it's so beautiful. Yeah. I really love this.
I was going to say, we've just come back from Northern Kruger and driving through the little towns, and you know, it's just, a road trip is so special. There's just so much to see. And what was amazing for me, one of the things that Life as a Garden was speaking about was topiaries, which, you know, some people love and some people don't love, and it depends on your type of garden. And I kind of thought they'd gone out of fashion, but we seem to have more and more people who are asking for structured, pruned, neatly cut plants. And then we were driving through, as I say, these little towns, and I couldn't believe the amount of topiaries that we saw from the Durantas and the Syzygiums. And I'm like, what? How do these towns manage to do topiaries so beautiful when they, you know, out of town, for want of a better word?
Well, look, we haven't been able to do much in the last 2 years, I suppose. We get out in the garden and I get frustrated. I take out all my frustration on this poor plant. I do. I feel very sorry for plants that have been topiaried within an inch of their lives.
Oh, no, but these were like classic. Like somebody had turned their Duranta hedge into like a bench, made it look like a bench. And somebody else had turned one into what looked like a swan. Mm. And I say these were in rural areas. It wasn't even in the middle of the city where I guess your garden is always a showcase for someone. But there you don't have walls and there's just fences. And so it's easy to sneak into people's garden and see what's going on. You know, and
that, it is a thing of the creativity. And gardening is about creativity. And it is of different ways. And one of my favorite things is when I'm in London is my friend lives in Kingston, just outside Kingston on Thames.
Yeah.
So between Richmond and Kingston in Ham, but you take the tube, you get off, and then you get onto a bus at Richmond, and then you come through, but you've got to sit on the top of the double decker bus. Because as you're going past, there's this one place which apparently Johnny Depp stayed at when he was in his Edward Scissorhands. Remember Edward Scissorhands when he's topiarizing?
Exactly.
And you go past this house and it's got two life-size elephants made in topiaries. So I don't know if it's just an apocryphal tale or if he actually did stay in that particular house. Apparently he did. And you can see it from the top of the double-decker bus behind these walls, which is lovely to see.
Yeah.
But I ain't got time for that. I like the wild and wooliness. I mean, you know, chaos theory gardening, having things just growing in wild abundance and seeing the bees so happy. I always find that a sterile garden, formal gardens are, for me, very sterile gardens.
I think it's going back to, we were talking about your book, is how you've got so many different varieties of gardens in the book, and it's what people choose to be their interpretation of their gardens.
Mm.
So I also quite like a wild garden, and one of the things Life as a Garden was talking about is grasses. So I tried to plant a little bit of a formal garden, but it obviously is not my style. It's not working very well at all. So I'm going to pull it all out, and I'm going to create a nice wild garden with a few aloe cuperi for the bees.
Mm.
So, you know, to put in a few flowering plants as well, so that at least it has some color, because that's very important to me.
Green is a color.
No.
Green is a color. Don't say green. Green is a lovely color. It's calming and soothing. And
the hue, what's it, hues of green might be a color, but as a whole, green is, no, color is yellow. And especially going into autumn and winter, you've got all those yellows and oranges and reds that are going to start, you know, with the leaves changing now.
Yeah, the liquid amber and the pin oaks and things are looking fabulous.
Even our indigenous, like the Celtis africana, you know, they're just starting. They've got that green and yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Almost look like Bafana Bafana colors. So that's what it is. Yeah, so I think that's what I like, is that we each have our own style of gardening. And maybe when people start gardening, that's what they actually have to look at, is what style of garden do they want? What is going to be representative of their personality? And like you said earlier, their creativity.
Mm.
And your book is a good way to start looking through and see different things that people can do in their gardens.
By the way, you don't know. Shameless self, it's called Garden Style by Melanie Walker and Connell Oosterbrook, in case you're looking for it. And you can always get hold of me as well, and I will make sure that you can get a copy. Okay. So I have lots of them at home because I bought a whole bunch because I was going to be doing all these garden talks. And of course we went into lockdown. So I ended up buying all of these books, which are just sitting at home. But anyway,
So
it is about that. And it is about finding a style that talks to you, that you feel comfortable in. I mean, you may have a very formal garden, but you're a tropical kind of girl, so that's really not going to be working for you.
Yes.
But there's nothing wrong with actually redoing the entire garden.
Well, I was saying to somebody the other day, which I thought was quite a good analogy, is how when you look at your, you know, we decorate our house and you buy certain things that are going to last a lifetime, and then you're going to buy certain things like your scatter cushions, which maybe you change seasonally or annually or whatever it is. And I think you have to look at your garden the same way. So, you know, when you plant your trees, those are going to be like your furniture and your dining room table and those things that are going to be the backbone of your home or garden.
Mm.
But then the little things like the annuals that you maybe put in and the perennials that you put in, they are like the scatter cushions. You know, you can change them as you want, as you feel necessary. When you plant seeds, you know, a lot of the seeds are also, again, annuals or maybe a few perennials. Mm. So they're just there for a while. And
bulbs,
you can
when
test
the bulbs
them.
Suddenly come
yes.
through, then you change it. So, yeah, those are just the accessories. But getting the bones right is the most important thing.
Yeah.
So if you're not somebody who likes topiaries,
no.
then gift them to somebody else and put in what you like. But talking about green and shades of green, we are, if you're listening to this before the 26th of March 2022, of course, going to have Earth Hour. And it's an international thing on the 26th of March from 8:30 South African time in the evening.
Yeah.
Now, we all know from Earth Hour when it started in 2007, I mean, I remember being in at Kirstenbosch. I was in Cape Town for Earth Hour, and I know that everybody there in Cape Town turned everything off.
Yes.
Which was great. It just suddenly went dark for an hour, which was great.
It gives me goosebumps.
And I loved it. But I mean, there's so many people who are just completely unaware and don't know how to be environmentally friendly. But in South Africa, load shedding is like, well, whatever. We turn our lights off all the time, okay? It's not a big deal for us.
Yeah.
So it's more about switching on or being switched on than switching off. Although you can turn your lights off, turn your phones off, get away from all of that stuff and really contemplate what is going on in the world when it comes to climate change. Look, I'm a firm believer that even if humans weren't here, this kind of stuff would be happening. I think we've just exacerbated it and sped it up a bit.
Yeah.
But it would still be happening in any case. So I know that in the news the last week or so is the fact that the temperatures at the poles have been like way up. So, yes, there are things that are happening, but would they still have been happening if it wasn't, you know, if it hadn't been people around?
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
And I was reading like in California and in the farming areas there, how their temperatures are actually going up so much now. I think it's beyond the 1.5, almost closer to 2 degrees. And so how their farming is changing and their access to water is changing.
There isn't no water in there. Los Angeles is absolutely awful.
I've never been there, but I was just reading about it and I thought, yo, how our lives are changing. But like you say, maybe Earth Hour is a time where you just go and contemplate, turn your brain on and go and contemplate. Maybe just go and lie out on the grass, you know, in your garden if you have. Or
if it's not raining.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting for me is I think a few days ago, it was a really miserable day. But then in the evening, all of a sudden the clouds disappeared and I went for a moonlit walk and I was like, wow, look at all those beautiful stars. Mm. You kind of had forgotten what they looked like, and it was a full moon. And I think it's time to just step out of the interiors that we have created and look to the environment and see what we can learn from it, what we can appreciate from it. You know, when last did you walk barefoot? Either, and it doesn't have to be in your garden. Maybe you don't have a garden, but even just barefoot in your home to feel the distance, different textures.
Walking and my shoes fly.
So I think it's just little things like that. You know, have you ever watched a bee trying to get pollen from a flower? That you obviously can't do at night, but maybe at night you're going to be watching the moths around your lights that are now turned off.
I don't
off.
Like moths.
Really?
No, they fly like they're broken. Don't like them.
Oh, I was going to say, we were actually identifying butterflies on our holiday. And then one evening we saw, and now we had to try and identify if it was a moth or a butterfly, because they, when they rest, the butterflies leave their wings open, whereas a moth will never open their wings fully. Yes.
And then they fly. And you can never catch a moth because they fly in, like, there's no discernible pattern to what they're doing.
Yeah. So it's very bizarre. It's just so interesting to actually take time out and look for the little things that the environment might be showing you.
It's the same as like when you go scuba diving. Everybody wants to go and see the turtles and the rays and the morays and whatever. And I'm like the person who's hanging on in the water and just checking out the fan worms and nudibranchs. So I'm very into looking at all the little stuff. And that's, I mean, it is. It's about switching on. We have become very closed off in our way of thinking as well over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And it's time now that, you know, things are opening up again, that maybe we need to start opening our brains up as well, opening our minds up and going out there and thinking, oh, and it's not just about me and how my life has been so impacted upon, et cetera, et cetera. It's go out there and have a look and see what, you know, you can do that will actually be better for the rest of the world. And I think that was one thing about, I mean, all those stories that came through when we were, the whole world was in lockdown, is how nature started coming back into its own again, because less pollution, all of that
stuff. Breathe again.
Yeah, it's not happening at the moment. Good Lord.
Yeah. So, but if you go back into those times, it could be something as simple as, you know, now is a lovely time for planting. Mm. It doesn't matter if you're planting a small veggie garden for yourself, planting up a container. It's a nice time to plant a plant. They might not always look fantastic going into winter, but, you know, their roots get to settle. Mm.
Plant a tree.
Anything like that is just go and look and see what you can plant. And if you don't have an area to plant in, maybe you could plant something at your local school or in your local park.
Okay, but you must be careful about – this is something that I got into discussions with Andrew Hanke.
Oh, okay, cool.
About grasslands, because, you know, we're very passionate about the grasslands. Yes, yeah. So it all came off the back of seeing something, a lovely video which I found on Facebook about – it's great – planting trees, but plant them where they're going to actually do some good. You can't just go and plant willy-nilly trees in the middle of a grassland, because we are here up on the Highveld, an endangered grassland biome. Okay, so we need to be careful of it. So what I've been doing is whenever it's anybody's birthday or if there's a special occasion, the people get a tree planted for them down in a previously forested area where they've lost a lot of the trees through Green Pop. But there are lots of organizations that will do this for you, but they go and they plant the trees in a place where the trees need to be planted, not just wherever. Yeah. So it's great thinking, okay, I've found a spot. I'm going to go and plant a tree there. Please don't do it. If you don't have a garden, go and find out where you can plant a tree where it's going to do some good.
Yes, I agree. Or don't have to always plant trees. It could be that you could be planting some grasses. You know, there's lovely grass seeds that you can sow in areas that look a little bit derelict. Or at this time of the year, one of my favorite is to plant the Namaqualand daisies. And we used to make Namaqualand daisy balls when you mix them up with the mud.
And then toss them over the wall.
Yes, and then you just throw them into abandoned places. And, you know, in 3 months' time, that abandoned place is going to be full of yellow and orange and pink blossoms.
Yes.
So, I mean, I think that's the sort of thing you could be doing is it doesn't always have to be a tree. I think we've got so in our mindset that you have to plant trees. But grasslands are great at carbon sequestration. So, you know, we mustn't think that only trees are going to be good for our environment. It's actually the biodiversity that will promote our environment and help us all be better for the, you know, look after our way going forward.
And we do talk about the Highveld quite a lot, but I mean, they're trying to get that kind of indigenous planting and stuff that was here in the area, in the wilds again, which is wonderful. So the people who are putting the wilds together, big ups to them, that it's a wonderful place to go walking. Everybody's like, oh, is it safe? Yes. It is totally. It's a wonderful thing to do. But so go and get green.
Yes, absolutely. And the other thing that, I mean, and we speak about it a lot, but Life as a Garden gave us quite a nice option for it was to do with a different mulching.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when you, once you've planted and, you know, that, for me, it's so frustrating because I'm not a big fan of weeds. And I know they're just plants in unwanted places. So for some people, the weeds will be interesting. But I always put a lot of mulch down. I like to use bark chip as mulch. I've tried using the macadamia nuts as well sometimes and the peach pips.
They're not very comfortable to walk on.
No, they're terrible to walk on. And then when you're trying to plant new plants, then your hands get, I don't like wearing gloves. They get a little bit frustrated. But, you know, so I do like using mulch. But then they spoke a lot about living mulches. And I think that's really important as well, like under your roses and things like that. Look for different plants that you could plant under them that maybe could be companions.
Mm.
But I think a mulch is a very important thing. One, it's going to cool your soils down, protects your roots, stops the weeds. I mean, the list is endless of how important mulching could be. And when I just see this barren ground in some places, I think, oh my goodness gracious me, I just want to cry.
Just put a nice thick layer of compost down on top, if nothing else.
Yes.
Or even newspaper if you don't, like, you're not too worried about how it looks. But put something down. You need to do that. The earth becomes so depleted if you don't have something on top of it, which is holding it in place. For me, putting plants underneath is the best way to go.
Yeah.
I just love having, like, ground covers. And I'm even using my Echeveria underneath my roses.
Oh, beautiful.
Because they don't use up too much water. They don't go for the root competition. So if you've got roses, I don't have very many roses. I only have a few. But one should always have a rose because it's the most important herb to keep the bugs off your other herbs.
So it's a sacrificial rose.
A sacrificial rose, yes.
I have one of those as well.
Yes.
Just one.
Just one. You've got to have one.
But if you could go back to like biomimicry, the mulching, where we were walking in the forests. So there you can see how the environment naturally creates mulch for itself from dropping its leaves and the needles and those sort of things. And I was like, oh, you see, even the environment naturally puts down a mulch. We should be copying it and learning from it.
But I mean, if you think about like in the Namaqualand or the Richtersveld, all that quartz stone works as a mulch.
Yeah. So, I mean, pebbles and stones as well are fantastic to use as mulch. And I think everything has a place because when I first thought about it, I was like, oh, can't use pebbles or stones anywhere in my garden. But I have a little bit of a runoff area where I can't plant anything. I think it's just too harsh. And so I've had to put pebbles or stones.
Mm.
And they work really, really well as also slowing the water. You know, with all this rain that we've been having, you need to try and slow the water so it goes back into our groundwater tables and doesn't end up in the roads, then in the gullies and all our topsoil ends up in the river.
Yeah,
you know, so if we can try and slow it down, and that's what mulching does as well, it slows down the runoff into the areas.
People mulch. That's
absolutely.
It. And autumn, of course, is the best time to actually start making your own mulch because instead of raking up all the leaves and throwing them in the bin, go and put them into bags. Put a couple, you know, big black plastic bags, okay? Put a couple of air holes in the plastic bags.
Yeah.
Leave them there until we get really cool temperatures and which time they will have kind of mulched down a bit.
Mm.
And then you put those into your garden beds like a nice blanket.
Oh, sounds excellent.
Then you don't have to add to landfills. I mean, you don't have to go and make big compost heaps. You can just put these into bags, leave them there for a little while. Stop being so tidy. Lordy. Anyway, let's talk about plants.
Okay, so we're onto that. We've done the grasses. It's that lovely time of year to start planting. And for me, I'm going to say those not so nice tasting vegetables. All the broccoli.
The best tasting vegetables.
Your cruciferous. What's cruciferous?
Cruciferous.
That's
yeah.
it. Those words.
Yeah, no, they're the best.
Go into your garden centers and try and look for something that's tasty with something else covered in chocolate that is good for you. You know, the green vegetables. It's a really lovely time to start planting them.
I love cruciferous vegetables. Oh, so they're my favorites.
I like the crunchiness of them. Maybe not the taste.
Are you telling me you don't like Brussels sprouts?
No. Unless it's smothered in bacon and cheese.
No, the best way to have them is just lightly boiled in salted water, and then you squeeze a lemon and black pepper and salt over them and eat it just like that with some butter.
Oh,
that is the best. There's nothing like it. They're little packages of joy. Come on.
I think of the sun as a little package of a huge package of joy. Certainly not Brussels sprouts, but I like the idea of growing them. So, you know, and it's always spinach is all year round, but the spinach is doing well. All your leafy greens, you know, radishes is also quite a cool time to do now. I like crunchy veggies, so I like the radishes and celery.
I love celery. I'm growing my celery. Whenever I buy a thing of celery, then I always keep the bottoms and I grow them and then I go and plant them in the garden.
You see? So
it grows again.
Yeah. So I think it goes back to your green is a color. This time of the year is planting green vegetables.
Okay. That's great.
So anything that's green is going to do exceptionally well. You know, all your colorful vegetables are not going to do really well. It's the end of the season for tomatoes. You should be harvesting them.
Yeah.
The, your squashes and your marrows and all of those should be harvested now and you should
although
be saying goodbye
are
to
coming
them.
Into their own.
Yes. Those are very, but you can't plant now. It's
no,
too late
plant
to plant.
Now? No, it's time for harvesting.
Yes,
yeah.
But harvest those, your eggplants you should be harvesting. Mm. So, you know, it's that seasonal change for your garden.
Mm.
And then if we've finished with the veggies, enough about that. Let's go back to color. And it's all your seedlings. So we always talk about the four P's of winter.
But it's still too early for those as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. I mean, the summer annuals are still looking so good.
Beautiful, beautiful.
You don't want to be pulling those out. And I mean, it's too warm still.
Yeah.
In the same way that you wouldn't be planting out your winter bulbs. Yeah. You're not going to plant out your winter annuals yet either.
No. So I think it's just if you're thinking of planning. You know, we were saying earlier how gardening is all about planning and patience. I think lots of peas come out of that plant.
That's where the peas are.
So, you know, maybe you can start planning and preparing. Oh, goodness.
Another
pea. We are full of peas. But do
that. And be
that
polite
instead.
To your plants, too. Talk to them
absolutely.
Nicely.
So I think that's what we should be looking at is just planning what you're going to do when it comes to middle of autumn and that type of thing, but really not too early now. Yeah.
Yeah, way too early. Mm. But I was thinking about, well, a lot of people didn't know, and my kids were like sitting there looking at me growing another celery plant from the bulb, the bottom part of the celery, which has been eaten. And I thought, you know, kids, they need to learn more about these. And that's what I like about life as a gardener is they have so many things that you can actually get kids involved in doing little experiments, which help them with their way of thinking about nature and about plants, as well as indulging their curiosity. And I think that a lot of children, because they've got like these things that they stare at all the time, they've lost a lot of their curiosity about the outside world.
Yes.
So, of course, putting all of these things up on the website about what you can do with your child in the garden is like such a fantastic idea. So what is this month's one?
Oh, so this one I think is awesome. It's to do with transpiration, which is quite a difficult concept for kids to understand because it's
breathing.
You know, breathing. And but you don't sometimes think that plants breathe. I think some people even forget that plants are actually living. You know, they buy them and then they don't realize that maybe they need water and food. And then we get taught at school that plants produce their own food.
Yes.
So it's a little bit of a strange concept.
But the thing is that everybody also thinks that plants breathe through their leaves, but they actually breathe through their roots.
And there's the stomata on their leaves
as leaves,
well.
On their leaves, yeah. But that's mainly for getting out
the water vapor.
Water vapor and carbon dioxide. I mean, oxygen.
Yes.
Oxygen. So, except at night when it becomes carbon dioxide.
Yeah. So there's a lovely experiment to do with transpiration. And what I like the best is that it described it as plant sweating. You know, you put a little plastic bag over a leaf and then you see what happens and you'll see that the water vapor comes from the plants. So I thought that was a really cool idea, and the idea of a plant sweating seems so foreign, but it kind of sticks in your brain. So then I think, well, kids will learn from that, and then they'll see transpiration and plant sweating and understand how through transpiration the water is moving from the roots of the plants up to the leaves, and how water from a plant becomes part of our water cycle in the greater scheme of things as well. So, you know, especially in areas like we were talking with lots of trees and reforesting, there you're going to have a much higher water content in your environment because of all the plants. And I think those benefits we forget about sometimes. You know, you think that, oh, you know, plants only use water, but actually plants also give us water in the environment. So that's what the experiment for the kids is teaching in Life as a Garden this month. And I just think that's great.
There's an interesting thing that I read the other day about how much water in each household is, I think it's like 48% of all the water that's used by a household goes into the garden.
No way.
Yeah. In over 70% of households.
Yeah.
Close on half of the water which is used by that household every single month is for watering the garden.
No.
Yep.
But then you should be using your grey water.
You should be using grey water.
And we shouldn't be using potable water. We should be using
exactly
some type of other water.
But then we're a society that cleans our toilets with potable water as well, you know.
Oh, goodness.
Yes.
No wonder the local governments just asked us to analyze what the nursery industry and the garden centers are doing in terms of water recycling.
Yeah.
And how we use our water within the nurseries. So we've actually just had to give them a report this last week on that.
That's what people can do for their Earth Hour. Sit down and think about how you're going to be much more green in your garden when it comes to water usage as well.
Yes. But I mean, with the summer that we've just had, I don't think I've had to water my garden, I want to say, since September, October.
I never water my garden, even in winter. Well, except my pot plants. My pot plants will get water. That's it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm used to it walking down the stairs and taking my buckets of my grey water from the bath and the shower out.
Mm.
And I haven't even got the exercise doing that anymore. No. I'm thinking,
you haven't had to water at all.
Yeah, so they shouldn't. It does freak me out a little bit when I'm walking and then I hear the sprinklers are on and we've just had a little bit of rain and I'm thinking, why? Why is your sprinkler on?
Oh, and the people washing their driveways with a hose pipe.
Are you not aware that we actually are a water scarce country and we should be looking water? It should be ingrained in us.
Mm.
It shouldn't be something that we get told we have to have water restrictions. We should be able to say, actually, we look after our water all the time, not just when we're under pressure.
Yeah.
And hopefully it will evolve to that. Maybe, as you say, the Earth Hour is sometime where we reflect on how we can look after our water.
But now talking about water, you were mentioning earlier to me about something on Life as a Garden called rain gardens. And you didn't know what a rain garden was. Okay, so explain for those people who are also not au fait with what a rain garden is, what it is. It's not just putting a pot in your garden and letting it catch rainwater and then putting some,
full
of plants. Yeah.
Yes, that's what I did. I thought that was a rain garden. But actually a rain garden is a way of catching the water to create a garden. So it's finding a space in your garden where you see you have a lot of water runoff, and how do you slow that water runoff down by putting in, you know, river sand and compost and potting soil to slow it down, and then, but not only planting water-loving plants, putting maybe bog plants or zantedeschia, you know, plants that might enjoy water to actually just look beautiful, but it's a space where there is a lot of water that collects.
Yes.
It's basically a water collection point in your garden. And Life as a Garden gave you such wonderful ideas. I was reading this and thinking, where in my garden can I create an actual rain garden rather than just having my pot with a water lily in it under my gutter, which I thought was my collection of rainwater in the garden. So I think, you know, if you go and read their newsletter or onto the website, then you can see it was just incredible because we have all this rain. And are we actually using it to benefit our garden? Apart from watering it, are we making our garden look beautiful because of the rain by using the rainwater in the right places in our garden and putting in the soil and the plants that match it?
Well, my garden, my whole back garden would just be actually one big rain garden because, I mean, I did a video of it during one of the storms. Sent it to my friend. She says, your swimming pool's coming on quite nicely. So, I mean, my whole back garden because I take all the storm water from the neighbors and things like that. But I'm fine because it doesn't actually go down to my next door neighbor as well because it just sinks the way
it's supposed to be
into my garden. And that's why I don't have to water, which is great.
So you have to find a space in your garden and test it almost that when you put a bucket of water down there, it seeps through and doesn't run off anywhere else. But within 24 hours, 48 hours, it's actually disappeared.
Mm.
And that's, again, how you're putting water back into your
water table.
Water table. Sorry.
The ground
thinking
water
backwards
table.
To going forwards. But, yeah, so it is finding that space within your garden where you could do that. And I just thought it was great. I love the idea of different gardens within your garden.
Well, while you're about doing, seeing as we're going to be walking outside at 8:30 on the 26th of March for Earth Hour, maybe you should think about putting in a moon garden.
I love the idea of a moon garden because that is normally to do with all your white flowers.
And scented flowers that make really great scent at night.
So it's actually to use your senses within your garden because you don't really have, well, you do have the white flowers, but you don't really have your scent of sight.
Mm.
So what do you appreciate in your garden at that time? And, I was going to say, I can feel that I'm going to be planting a little bit of a moon garden as well.
Lighting as well. Getting the right lighting. Fairy lights, if you love them. I'm like a fairy light fanatic. But getting the right lighting for the right mood for a moon garden. And, you know, we can make gardens that we can use all year round here in South Africa as well.
Yes.
Especially, I mean, I know it gets cold, but if you've got a little fire pit outside, if you're going to be sitting outside and you want to hang out with your mates instead of like hunkering down in the bunkers of the lounge during winter, then put some thought into even having just some plants that have got white foliage or strips on the edges where you can see them at night being picked out by the lights.
Even your
hen and chicken, for instance, will have that
the
variegated one. Yeah.
And I mean, variegation, my favorite. I love variegated plants. There's so many different ones that you can find. But even some of your grasses that you could think of that would have a variegation, some of your formiums, you know, they might not be white, but they would be that slightly yellowed. So your two-toned type of foliage in the garden, but then also your white flowering plants. You know, I mean, if you have your star jasmines in, and I mean, at this time of the year, you're in patience with the white ones. They've almost got that hue of glistening in the evenings, you know, especially with the rain.
Petunias have become like an all year round plant, haven't they?
Yeah. They're definitely doing really well. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a lovely time to plant petunias in Kalibrooka now. You know, they will like the dryness of the winter and they'll just perform so nicely in the warmth of the winter sun, you know, so it's not one of my favorite plants, but they do exceptionally well going into a winter time.
For them, I hope we've given you lots of food for thought. You've gotten just the food of the vegetable garden, which Carrie doesn't like.
Yeah.
What else can we find on Life is a Garden? I mean, obviously online you've got lifeisagarden.co.za, so you can go and check it all out there.
And we must talk about fertilizers. You know, it's getting to that time where you kind of want to feed your garden to get it prepared for winter. It's almost like all the animals would be harvesting and collecting for winter. So that's what you want to be doing is feeding, whether it be your lawns, your flower beds, you know, your citrus, your camellias, your azaleas. There's a lot of plants that actually just need that little boost now so that come springtime, they're going to perform amazingly for you.
They can still, before they go into dormancy, they can suck up all that goodness and store it in time for spring again.
Yeah.
We're already thinking forward to spring at this stage. Well, some of us are anyway.
We're just going to bypass winter completely.
Oh, I think I'll just hunker down like the squirrels and go and sleep for the winter. I can't stand it. Maybe I'll just have to go somewhere else in the world for the whole time.
Yeah,
I hear that France is nice at this time of year.
And, you know, I don't know how many people I know who are going to Mauritius. I saw even Safé had a special.
Yeah.
That was like 200 rand on this day you can fly to Mauritius. I was like, 200 rand for a flight? That's amazing. I just want to fly there and back straight away.
Although, at this time of the year as well, I think it's cheaper to go to Phuket for a week or 10 days than it is to go to Mauritius. So,
oh, my goodness gracious.
Yeah, you just need to have your passport sorted, of course.
Yeah.
Must get that sorted out. All right, so don't forget, of course, you can get onto lifeisagarden.co.za for all of these ideas and more.
Yes, absolutely.
Things that are happening in the gardening world.
Yeah.
And Carrie, hopefully we'll catch up with you again next month.
Yes, thank you.
And you can tell us what we should be doing for winter.
That dreaded word.
Yeah, the word I do not like. Yeah. Thank you so very much.
Thank you for having me.
Please, don't forget 26th of March. Get out there, do something for the earth instead of just be yourself. Mm-hmm. Or go and do something for yourself by doing something for the earth.
Absolutely.
Above all, stay grounded. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to another episode of Grounded from Solid Gold Studios in Johannesburg. For more green ideas and events, pop along to Mel's Treasures on Facebook.